Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley, and also Google Plus, Neil Haley. And I tell you what, when I get to interview international stars, it makes me really excited because we are definitely a global radio network. We're heard all over the world. And to be able to have somebody with this talent that is about to bring it to the United States, and I'm going to be one of the first to get to talk to her. I'm so excited to welcome to the program award-winning vocalist, Malaysian pop star, Malaysian Idol winner, Jacqueline Victor. Jacqueline, thanks for calling, and we're excited to have you on today.
Hi, I'm excited. You're getting me excited about this thing, this whole talk show now.
Oh, absolutely. You think about it in so many ways of being an international star. From Malaysia, it must be such a tremendous honor, isn't it?
Yes. I must say I'm really lucky and very blessed. Very, very blessed.
Absolutely. And I guess traveling all over the world, what has it taught you in certain ways, specifically, especially growing up and stuff, in not the best environment in certain ways, struggling a lot, to be where you are today? You said blessed, but also, I guess, just something about having that humility still, right? Especially going from country to country and recording and performing and stuff, right?
How does it feel? It feels really good. I never dreamed that I would be where I am today. And as you said, I did come from not very wealthy family. It was really difficult for us at times growing up. We didn't have enough food. We didn't have a lot of anything, really. So to come from that to where I am today is a huge jump. But along the way, the things that I've learned, my experiences in life and with music and singing with my band, to Idol, to, you know, it's just been awesome. It's like I wouldn't trade it for anything. It's just really good.
Absolutely. So let's go into the story about the Malaysian Idol. I'm interested in hearing this. At the point when you decided to be part of this, is it the same as the United States? Is it the same type of setup as the American Idol?
Same. Yeah. Yes, it's the same franchise. So it's a triangle between Fremantle, Sony Music, and, well, at the time it was BMG, and the TV station. So when we heard that it was going to be aired in Malaysia or held in Malaysia for the first time, we were like, really? And the CEO of the TV station, who actually bought the franchise, he actually said during the press conference, and this is what got my mom really excited, and she busted into my room one day and like, you're going to take part in this. And I'm like, okay. Because in order to be a part of the competition, then that would mean that you'd have to, let go of other commitments. Like, you wouldn't be able, you'd have to focus entirely on the competition and you know, work and whatever you have, whatever else that you had going on, you'd have to sacrifice those in order to be a part of Malaysian Idol. So that was a big decision for me because I was helping my mom out and I've got three younger brothers and everything. But sorry, I missed out the bit where the CEO of the TV station actually said that, who knows, somebody from the area where I lived could actually, well, he just randomly said it, but it was the area from which I was. He said someone from this area could actually win World Idol, is what he said. So my mom got really excited, and everyone's like, oh, you have to take part in this one. You have to. And I couldn't. I wanted to, because we'd been following American Idol for a while, and you know, it's obviously a really huge platform to launch anybody's career, musical career. So what I, my issue at the time was that I couldn't just take off work, and I'd already had gigs lined up because I was singing before Idol, pre-Idol, with my band for about 8 years. So that would have been a big thing to forego in order to take part. And what if nothing comes of it? So you see, I'm my biggest enemy, so I keep thinking, ooh, what if, what is this? So, yeah, but in the end, my brother was the one who signed me up for the competition, and I said, okay, we'll do it. And then that was that. And every week I was just so hard on myself. It's like I could, you know, the slightest pitching, like I'm so particular about my pitch, and I hate it, and I'd make a face myself. Like, if nobody noticed it, they would notice it because of my face. Like, it would show on my face, oh, like, oh, you went off pitch. So I was, like, really hard on myself. So every week that I went through, I'd be like, really, is this happening? Is this really happening? Like, wow. Until I got to the finals, and even then I was, like, sort of in disbelief. This has got to be a dream. So, yeah, that was a long time ago, though, when I Malaysian Idol itself.
Well, it's great to always, but for our United States audience, especially North America, to understand this story is so important because of, again, you starting in a way where you were no, semi-known, but to become a superstar once that happened, because your career took off in Malaysia right after that, right after winning that. It just kind of give me the example. You were playing in front of what types of audiences before Malaysian Idol and then afterwards? Tell us like that.
Okay, yeah. So before Malaysian Idol, it was, well, people go to clubs, and we played all over Malaysia. We traveled a bit outside of Malaysia. But basically, you know, patrons of clubs who really would just come over to the club to have a good time. Let's drink some, let's smoke some, let's do this and that. But once I started getting on TV for Malaysian Idol, then it was just a whole different ballgame. It's like you needed to learn, like, stagecraft. And, see, I wasn't used to all this because you just get up on stage and sing. You have a ball on stage. Your band's behind you. We're rocking. Yeah, everybody's having a good time. But when you get on stage and there's a whole camera crew and it's everything's, like, so, what's the word? Like, for me, it was just totally different. I was like, whoa, what's this? Like, really, I've got to look into the camera when I'm singing?
Yes.
Like, a whole new thing I had to learn. And I'm still learning. But the audience that I perform for these days, like, I do a lot of big corporate gigs and outdoor, like, huge concerts and stuff that, you know. So, yeah, I've sung for... Well, actually, the last big thing I did was I actually sang for your president.
Yes, while I saw that. Yeah.
So, that was such an honor, yes.
That must have been amazing. I mean, but just think
yes,
of that.
It was.
So think of that.
I was shaking. Yeah.
For not being known to after winning the Malaysian Idol and then your career, and then it's become an international, you've become an international pop star in many, many different countries. So it started in Malaysia, and then through the Idol deal, that opened up a lot of doors in other countries, right, to get performing your music.
Especially in Asia.
And now,
because of the language.
Absolutely. And now the excitement starts because you're going to the United States. And
and
let's talk about the release of Unleashed. And tell us specifically for our listeners out there all over the world that have heard your music, how some of this is going to be a little bit, some changes are made with the English LP. And tell us about that.
All right, okay. So, like, before this, like, all the songs that I sang on every album was, well, 90% in Bahasa Malaysia, which is the official language in Malaysia. And, well, we had one or two tracks that I redid, one or two original tracks. But this project, Unleashed, is 100% in English, which I'm so glad of. I'm so happy that it's in English. It's interesting because it's the first time I've actually sat down and written my own lyrics. Like, I really got into the music. We've got five tracks. Well, we have six, but now we've got five. And then it started off like this. We just wanted to get two singles, actually. And then we made six demos. And in the end, they all decided that we should just go ahead and record all six. So that's where it got interesting. So I actually sat down and I thought, I want to really be a part of my music. Because in Bahasa, I don't really write that well in Bahasa. So English, I speak English all the time. So I should be able to do this, shouldn't I? So I sat down and I got into it. Like, I was writing lyrics in my sleep while I was driving. I was like, so when I really got into the songs, and then in the end, we had different sets of lyrics, so we swapped this and that and all the other, and we recorded them, and we're actually having them mixed in the States.
Oh, wow.
And lasted in the States. And we're releasing the first single on the 10th of July. It's called Remedy. It's like an EDM track. And I'll tell you about the other five songs.
So, absolutely, definitely. For our listeners out there, again, the changes of your music in certain aspects. Again, singing.
That's where I wanted to go. Okay. So now, from singing ballads, like they know me as a ballad queen for some odd reason. I don't know why. And the winning song of Malaysian Idol is like any other idol winning style, like the winning song from any other idol show. So it was a huge ballad, and it's like I still sing it every time I have a gig. They request for me to sing it. So from singing ballads to this Unleashed album is really different because it's all in English. So for the fans in Malaysia and Asia who know me to be singing in Bahasa, this is a big jump. So I'm singing entirely in English. And the style of music is different. It's EDM. It's, I think people find it hard to sometimes to accept change in my country, I think, because they're so used to hearing me do that. When I signed with KRU, the label that I'm under, the first single that they released was kind of a rockish track, which took a while to pick up because people were like, really? What is she doing? We're not used to listening to her sing this sort of stuff. So it really took a few couple of months before the stations would play it. And then when it did pick up, they were like, oh, we really like this song. And we like the lyrics. It's so empowering, blah, 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 blah. And, so I think they would be used to change now, but this and with EDM and because I don't know if you've heard the song yet, but it's really like sort of a clubby
kind of. Yeah, I have not gotten a chance to listen to it, and definitely you'll have to tweet it out to me so we can get it going through Twitter and stuff like that. And your following is tremendous, unbelievable. When you post on Facebook, they love your post for sure, your Facebook fan page.
Thank you.
I was checking that out, and I'm going to have to like that. I was just checking out all the different things, and I said, you know what? You're an international star. I know they're going to love you in the United States, and I think that what your fans all over the world will look and say, you know what? It's still the great talent that Jacqueline's able to bring, but now she's sharing it to the English world, and I think that's I think it's important because you always have to reinvent yourself. Think of Taylor Swift from country music to pop. If you have the growth that Taylor ended up from going from country to pop, you're gonna have an unbelievable ride. And who have you worked with to develop this whole English LP? Who's some of the people?
Sorry, say that again.
Worked with, working with, like,
who did I work with?
With the producing and all the different things.
KRU, the three brothers, right, who run KRU, who used to sing, and they're huge in Malaysia. So one of the brothers, he's in charge of music and all that, so he writes most of the stuff. So he came up with all the melodies and stuff, and then we did the demo together. And then basically, well, we had... his name's Edry, and he looked over the project, and we had different people come in at different times, you know, to give their point of view and their take on it and all that. So generally, just a big project by KRU, and then in the States, it's called Phil Shapiro is helping out.
Some really talented people, Jacqueline, you're working with. Some really talented people, people you're working with on this album. So again, where can people find information on you and learn about, especially when the launch on the 10th, where they can go to go ahead and download the music and stuff? Where can they go?
Okay, I think the track's already available on iTunes. You can already pre-order on iTunes. So just search for Jacqueline Victor, JACLYNBICTOR, and search for Remedy. That's the first track. I'm not sure if all five tracks will be available or not yet, but at the moment... Sorry? Right. Okay, so Remedy is available on the 10th of July, and all five songs from the EP will be available on the 25th of September.
So really some exciting times for you, and they can follow you at different places, your Facebook fan page and your Twitter for our listeners as well, so they can check you out.
All right. I'm on Twitter, it's Jacqueline_Victor. I'm on Instagram, it's also Jacqueline_Victor, although I don't do a lot on Instagram yet. And I'm on Facebook, which is Jacqueline Victor, yes. You can go and like all the Jacqueline Victors on Facebook. There, because there's a fan club. There's my personal page. There's a page by the fans itself. Yeah, so there's a few Jacqueline Victors there. You can like anything with my face on it.
What message would you want to share to your fans all over the world right now? What would you want to tell them?
Oh my God! Thank you so much for allowing me this privilege to be, a part of music and to share it, to be able to share it with you guys. And I really hope that you like what I've been doing, what I am doing, what I will be doing. And, I hope you really like it. And, I hope you guys could show me some love.
I think they are, and you're going to do really well, especially a lot of times people that are international stars, you're going to hit it big in the U.S., and best of luck. And when you're huge, I hope you'll come back on my show. I mean, in the States, you'll come back on my show again to kind of give us an update of what's going on. So thanks again for calling, Jacqueline.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, and all the different areas. And I'm really excited to welcome the program 8-time PGA Tour winner, 8-time Champions Tour winner, pro golfer Fred Funk. Fred, thanks for calling, and I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Yeah, thanks, Neil. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, and what is new with you? Give us an update of what's going on with your career, and then we'll get right into talking about the Players' Championship Series.
Well, I'm taking the top 50 career money this year and playing a little bit on the regular tour and also playing the Champions Tour, but mainly the Champions Tour full-time. I've played 5 events on the regular tour this spring, 3 in the fall, and had limited success out there. I've been close to playing pretty well, but not that good, and just a round or two away. But it's kind of been a slow start for me. I've played consistent on the Champions Tour, but real disappointed with my finishes. I finished, I think the worst finish is 15th, and my best is 12th. So I've finished right in that area 4 times. But I've had a chance a couple times, even last. About 2 weeks ago, I had a chance to win. I was leading going into the final round. I had a bad last day. But overall, it's been pretty good.
And that's good for sure, Fred. And in your career and your success, as I talked about at the beginning, did you ever think when you decided to become a golfer that you would have this much success?
No, I was really just seeing how good I could be. That was always my goal. It still is my goal, see how good I can be. And if it's good enough if it was good enough for the PGA Tour, great. And if it wasn't, then that was fine too. I just wanted to know I gave it a chance, and I did. And it's turned into a very, very good career.
So, what do you think, Fred, of the growth of golf in the past 20 years? It must be amazing the amount of fans that go to the events now, and just how it's just such a huge atmosphere, and people are just talking it up so well. The sport has just grown so much, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really has. You have to owe it to, I kind of call it 3 Santa Clauses. We had the original Santa Claus, and then Arnold Palmer, back in the day, brought the game to the people. And then Tiger Woods came along and really made it cool, kind of made the sport less of an elite sport, more of an athletic sport, and open to, anybody. And he made it, where the viewpoint is, or what young kids looked at it as really a cool sport, because he put it on the map and made it so athletic looking. And, he had that unbelievable body that he worked or morphed himself into with all the hard work that he's done. He looked like a defensive back on an NFL team. But the game has really progressed. And as far as people watching the best in the game, I think it's very popular. We still got to grow the game. It's still very difficult to get access to enough golf courses, and I think the time it takes to play is the drawback to a lot of people. When you have a family life, it's hard to justify 5-6 hours at a golf course, you know, playing around. But overall, I think it's really good. As a spectator, it's a great sport to watch in person.
Absolutely, and it's something that, again, always the Players' Championship is trying to upgrade things and make sure that the experience for the fans is better and better. And can you tell us a little bit about what's happening in that end?
Well, really, the Players' Championship is played at the first stadium golf course, the concept that Dean Beaman came up with, where you have the mounding on the sides of the golf course that allow the spectators to have a clear view. And you can get a lot of people that have a clear view because you're sitting usually higher up than the golfers, and you're looking down, and you can see everything. So it has that true stadium concept. And the Players' Championship, which was played at TPC Sawgrass, was ironically the very first TPC built by Pete Dye, and in my opinion, is still the best. It's just a really good golf course that rewards ball control. Excuse me, I got this cough, but ball control, and you know, a guy that's really on his game that week is identified at the end of the week because it is such a penal golf course. It's very difficult to get out of position to score well, and you know, the players, what I like about it is that it's cross the board type winners too. You have guys that have hit the ball a long, long way, the bombers of the game, and then you have guys like me that have won, and you know, kind of, well, definitely one of the shorter hitters on tour. So I managed to maneuver my way around the golf course that week. I actually led the week in greens and regulation for the week in fairway fit. So I got rewarded for doing that week. And then you do have the guys that hit it a long way. So it's a pretty neat venue.
And through that venue, I'm sure you've been hearing feedback from the fans that have enjoyed it tremendously and love the experience keeps getting better, right? Especially because they just love the game of golf.
Yeah, they've done a great job with fan interaction and the fan experience of going there and really having a great day of it, not only watching golf, but, you know, good food, good places to relax and enjoy the outside. And the beauty of the golf course is spectacular. It's unbelievable bird life there, and you have also eagles, bald eagles that are on the property, and you have, you know, all the normal birds you see with all the different cranes and the ospreys and everything. So it's really pretty with all the water hazards in the trees. It's a pretty place to go. The back nine there, I think from the sixth hole on, is just an unbelievably pretty golf course.
So speaking of the food, I've heard that it's really good at this event as well, correct?
Yeah, it is. They've done a great job with some stations out on the golf course where the guys people, the families, the spectators can sit down and relax and have a good time and just really make a day of it, really, is what it's all about. And at the same time, see a lot of break off. And then you have the best stadium concept or area where it's like an amphitheater of golf with the 16th green and 17th hole is just an incredible experience to enjoy all the drama that unfolds on those two holes, especially on 17.
Cool. So what is your goal, Fred, is to continue to improve throughout the season? Do you have a major goal for the year that you want to attain?
Well, yeah, I have a goal where I really want to compete and try to have a shot at up on the Champions Tour. I want to knock off at least one major out there, and I feel like when I'm playing really well, I can play at an extremely high level still, and I just want to be able to get to that point.
Cool, and you're excited about the Masters as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm not in it, but I'm always excited about watching it. It's truly the best atmosphere of all of golf. It's really a magical place. It's unbelievable beauty there, and it's one of the few tournaments, or probably the only tournament, where you really feel like you know the golf course, even if you haven't played it or been there, because the TV coverage is so good nowadays, and the excitement that goes down the back, down the back nine with the two par fives and you know, everything else that goes on with guys trying to win that thing. The last couple of years have been really exciting. It's had a lot of people with a chance to win it.
Okay, Fred, where can we find more information on you, learn more about you, and also more information on the Players Championship Series?
Well, I'm sure you can Google it and look it up on the PGA Tour website. You just get on PGATour.com, and they'll have all sorts of avenues you can go to where you can bring up players' profiles and bring up tournament information that's coming up.
And, Cole, do you have a website or Twitter or anything, Fred, that people can follow you?
You know, I do have a web. Yes, I hadn't even been on it. It's so new, my website. So I wouldn't even be able to tell you how to get on it at this point.
Okay, well, I'm sure we Google Fred Funk. We'll find all that information as well. Safe travels. Good talking to you. And best of luck on the tour. I know that you'll continue to improve and have a great career. And I enjoyed learning about you today and about Players Championship. So thanks again for calling, Fred.
I appreciate it, Neil. Thanks.
All right, take care. Really enjoyed my conversation with Fred Funk about golf and also the Players' Championship. Again, the Players' Championship will be May 6th through 11th. For more information, you can go to www.pgatour.com/theplayers. Remember that youth 18 and younger get in free with one ticketed adult, and all active duty, reserve, military retirees, and dependents get complimentary admission the entire week if you show a voucher and military ID. So, always, I'm sure, as what we heard today, what a great experience to go to the Players Championship. So you can go to PGATour.com/theplayers. We'll be back in just a moment with some more great education talk. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor. Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor. And then also Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I think that the Pittsburgh Steelers fans are going to start to get a little bit upset with me, especially with one of the major rivals, especially back in the day, the Jacksonville Jaguars. I've had David Garrard on the show. I've had Marcus Stroud on the show. But now this guy tore us up for many games, I remember. So I want to welcome the program, former Jacksonville Jaguar and New England Patriot, Fred Taylor. You're a Pro Bowler, 10,000 yard club. Fred, thanks for calling.
Hey, Neil, I appreciate the very kind introduction. I was thinking for a second that the locals are going to think you're trying to sell them out, man. That was a great feather, pretty good greeting right there, but I appreciate you for having me this morning. I apologize.
No, that's not a problem, Fred. It's a situation where we have to look at this in certain ways. I've had Steelers, mostly former Steelers, and I'm always telling them, you know, all these other teams are reaching out to me, and they're our rivals. So, you know, I've had a lot of Baltimore Ravens on, and I'm like, okay, guys, when is it New England Patriots? I said, I'm waiting for more Steelers. But, again, you guys do such tremendous stuff, and foundations is what I really like to focus on my radio show. So, Fred, let's go ahead and talk about when you started the Fred Taylor Foundation. Tell us about that.
Well, we began the Fred Taylor Foundation in 2009, and I remember specifically that being the year because I was in New England, having, you know, gotten released from Jacksonville. I was in New England, and I sustained an injury. I had a severe high ankle sprain that resulted in me missing 10 games, but throughout or early in the injury, I remember vividly being in my living room down there in Providence, Rhode Island, sitting there, and then I felt the sensation to have to use the restroom. And my bedroom was only, let's say, 10 yards away, maybe less than that. And I remember having the struggle to get up off the couch, get on the crutches, you know, the blood rushed downward towards the ankle, and the pain was just excruciating, and that journey felt like forever. The 10 yards felt like 100 yards. And immediately a thought came to my mind. Throughout my career, I would always ask myself, why me? By me, and then my grandmother, very religious woman, she would say, never question God. You know, so I was like, Grandma, I'm not questioning God. I'm questioning why me? You know, but she said, just give it a chance and you'll be fine. So throughout that journey, to my bedroom, a thought came to my mind. I said, I want to start a foundation. I want to be able to give back to those kids with physical disabilities. Because I felt then in my mind that, you know, they're unhappy about their disability, but as I've learned, that they're normal. They think that they're just normal as everyone else, and to them they are. They definitely are. But for us who think we're normal, you know, we take simple things as walking for granted. So that thought that entered my mind, you know, I've always given back to others, foundations. But the thought that entered my mind at that particular moment was, I want to do this, and I want to, you know, be able to encounter those individuals and see the smiles on their faces myself. You know, because I work hard for everything that I've earned, so I want to be able to get back to the physically disabled, whether temporary or permanent, as well as those kids in the underprivileged and distressed communities, such as my hometown of Belgrade, Florida. So that's how the whole concept of the Fred Taylor Foundation came to fruition.
Well, it's interesting to hear, Fred, that through adversity, through, you know, an injury pretty much ending your career, because, again, you could have continued to play for sure with it didn't seem like you were slowing down. Even the older you're getting, you still were running like the younger running backs, just a really top-notch running back. And then the injury happened, and then thinking of the injury and thinking about, you know, kids with physical disabilities, or it's simply a great idea, because a lot of them, you know, we talk about, you know, after-school programs or different things, which is part of your foundation, but you're focusing on an area that truly kids with physical disabilities need help. They truly need emotional help to get through certain things, and they also need financial help in certain ways. So it's a fantastic you decided on that being the focus of your foundation.
Yes, it was easy. I mean, it was really a no-brainer, and you know, I would like to do more, but as we spoke about prior to starting the interview, you know, in this day and age of the economical downturn a couple of years ago, you know, soliciting the funds and getting contributions and support to foundations has gotten a little harder over the past couple of years. But I'm not going to give up. You know, I know those kids at children's kids hospitals, when I do the after-school program, to see the smiles on their faces. For me, that's what it's all about. And I'll fight to the very last breath to try and, you know, do something just so I can see those smiles on their faces. But at that particular point in time, man, it was, I just thought this would be a great idea just to go in there and just give back. It feels good to give back. Adversity, right, you know, it writes our story. It defines us. It builds our character. And for me, you know, I didn't want to be selfish at that point in time. I could have done anything, you know, but I wanted to, you know, find a way to get healthy, number one. Thankfully, that thought did enter my mind. And I wanted to try and help my teammates. Those were, you know, the things that were my priority sheets, and those were the things that I got done. And I want to continue to build. We're in the process of actually trying to rebrand the foundation. Because, like I said, throughout that downturn, it was tough. It was struggling. At once, I was a little frustrated. I want to do more. And, you know, I thought of, you know, just folding the thing. But, you know, a lot of people are dependent on me. You know, we do turkey drives back at home at Belgrade, Christmas giveaways. We do camps for the kids. And they look forward to these things. And, you know, it'll be a shame if I had to, you know, to fold. Because of the lack of funding. But I'm going to continue to try and fight and use my brand and my name, and hopefully the leverage that I created or the name that I created for myself while I played and those relationships that I was able to encounter, I want to try and use those to try and, you know, parlay it to help the kids as need be.
And that's the important thing. Like you said, it's foundation's a business, Fred. And, you know, you finish your NFL career, and then that's when you start your foundation. Some guys do it during the year, during their career, and then use their, you know, some sort of their influence to keep it going. But then once their career ends, you know, you have to figure out life after football, and foundation's part of it, but other things as well. And we'll talk maybe a little bit about that at the end of this interview, just to see what's going on with Fred Taylor life after football. But when we're talking about specifically enough, some something like this foundation, you see, you don't want to end this because you're helping so many people. So tell us specifically, you said you did a turkey drive, but what types of programs are helped by your foundation once people donate or part of a drive or certain things? Who does it benefit?
Actually, it benefits the local, the community. As again, I mentioned earlier that Belgrade, Florida, demographically very impoverished and distressed community, and a lot of crime, a lot of violence, much more than when I was growing up, than when a former Steeler, my cousin, Santonio Holmes, when he was growing up. Things have changed, and there's a lot of negative influence out there, and our main goal is we partner with the Boys and Girls Club, Palm Beach County, and right there, situated in Belgrade, there's a facility that we've actually partnered with that oversees the turkey drive. And we provide, this year we provided over 400 meals for the families. Actually, we provided over 600 meals. I apologize.
Oh, that's great.
150 families at four meals per family. And then the Christmas drive, it's the same exact thing, as well as the camps. You know, just getting the kids, keeping them off the street is the main objective. Keeping them off the street, keeping them away from the negative influences. As much as social media can be a good thing, social media to those young, you know, kids that don't have the physical, mental capacity, I should say, to make their own decisions a lot of the time. They can be negatively influenced by that stuff and their peers as well. But we try and minimize that exposure, keep them off the street, keep them in the Boys and Girls Clubs, and provide books for them, you know, after-school programs that are going to take up some of their time, providing athletic equipment, you know, just so they can can think that the world hadn't given up on them. Because Belgrade, it can really close you and lock you in, and you can give up. Now, I've seen a lot of great athletes, a lot of great people that just tanked it and just gave up. Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of hope there. And a lot of it is dependent upon myself. I partner with Santonio Holmes, as I mentioned, my cousin, his Third and Long Foundation. And we do a lot of stuff together there. And we try our best to impact the community.
And that's the key thing. You're giving back for how you were helped, you were mentored to become a successful athlete. You say, now it's time for me to give back, to go to the community and make a change and make a difference. And that's why, Fred, you said, you know what, I'm going to continue this because I don't want to see my community go down the tubes. I want to help in any way possible. So there are athletes or individuals out there that truly need your help, so that they could be someday Fred Taylor, or they could someday be a doctor, lawyer, engineer, or teacher.
Without a doubt. And just to share a quick story with you, Neil, we've been hosting those camps for 4 or 5 years now. And, you know, throughout the camp sessions, the kids would come up and say, are you Fred Taylor? Like, yeah, you know, I'm Fred Taylor. So you play running back? Yes, I did play running back. So where are you from? And I'm like, well, yeah, I'm from here. No, you're not. No, I'm from here, born and raised. I can take you to my house. I can show you where I grew up. And that's the one thing that I'm an advocate for these days, relationships and transparency. I want the kids to be able to understand that you can be like me or better. Actually, I want you to be 9 times, 10 times better than I was, you know, but I'm from here. You know, you have the same opportunity that I have. As a matter of fact, when I was your age, I didn't meet a professional athlete. No one gave me a chance. I had to create that chance, you know, by having a good grandmother who believed in keeping me off the streets and staying out of trouble. And thankfully and fortunately for us, we were blessed with talent, and I was able to make it to the professional level. So the story behind all of that is I want them to understand that they can do the same thing that I did because I'm from the same exact place. And that's the most special feeling in the world, in my mind.
We're talking to Fred Taylor, Jacksonville Jaguar Pro Bowler, 10,000-yard club, about the Fred Taylor Foundation. And, Fred, I see that you have so many different components to this foundation when it comes to the camps and it comes to the after-school programs and then also with the physical disabilities. So is that done in the Boys and Girls Clubs, the youth programs for with kids with physical disabilities? Is that also in the Boys and Girls Clubs? Or is that...
No, actually, that component, Neil, is more so a partnership we established early on with the Special Olympics of Miami down here in South Florida. And the other portion of that is the Baptist Hospital, Baptist Wolfson Hospital in Jacksonville, Florida, where we committed a pledge over 5 years, and we're still engaged with the Wolfson's Children's Hospital in Jacksonville just to try and help with their facilities and provide whatever equipment that they may need. But the beauty of it all, Neil, is the fact that you are giving monetarily, but giving of your time is even more special.
It truly
is. You can actually be there and see those smiles. You can see the change. That's the key. That for me, that's the key, and that's what I smile about. A lot of people, you know, as you mentioned, a lot of guys use their influence while they're playing, and they get these funds, and it's a lot easier. Everyone's happy-go-lucky, and a lot of times, and not to knock, you know, the players, but it's really hard to juggle, you know, an NFL career and a lot of times be able to be present on an actual charity event that you may be hosting or a moment where you're giving back. Some guys make it happen, but it's truthfully, it's really hard. But the key in all of that is being there and seeing these people, the lives that you're influencing, that the change that you're making. That's the beauty of it.
It definitely is, Fred, and that's a great point you brought up about, again, you're hands-on with this foundation. You have help, but you also are hands-on to see the success of this. And when you're playing in the NFL, a lot of times someone else is running it, and you don't get the opportunity to really be present. And I could tell, Fred, you're definitely present by taking the kids that from the camp down to where you lived and say, hey, I'm from this town in Florida, Belgrade, and you could too. You could do too. Could be Fred Taylor someday. What a tremendous role model and influence that is to say you could do whatever you want to do. And I'm here and I'm giving back to the community in so many ways. And what your foundation does is raise monies for the camps, the after school programs, feeding kids, but also the physical disabilities with the Special Olympics and Children's Hospital. So you do so many fantastic things. So where, Fred, can we find information on your foundation and learn more about how we could donate to the Fred Taylor Foundation?
As I mentioned, we have a website, and we, as I mentioned a second ago, we are in our rebranding stages, but there's plenty enough information on FredTaylorFoundation.com, or you could email me, or actually the foundation, at TaylorBiz@me.com. And there's plenty of ways that we will be able to get back to you. But again, we're going to rebrand this thing, and we're going to be extremely successful. It's just now is our opportunity to identify everything that we could have done better the past couple years. And going forward, we're going to do those things. We're going to partner with the right people. And we're going to provide for those kids that are in need. I can guarantee that.
Well, fantastic, Fred. And any other news for us right now? Any of the events coming up or anything to promote?
Well, actually, we have a camp, and our tentative schedule right now is for it's for July 11th and 12th. We're going to do a full day camp, and we're going to make it a 2-day event this year where we can actually get the community involved, and we're going to also do a talent search. And I'm going to bring a friend or two that's the CEO of a record company, a local record company here in Miami. And we're going to see if the talent can get out there and see if they can impress upon Mr. Lucas here and maybe something can come of it. But the whole basis behind that particular talent search is to get the community involved. Again, we could do a celebrity basketball game, but I fear for injury for the guys that are still active, and the community isn't necessarily involved other than watching from the stand. So we want to actually get them out to perform and participate, have the local vendors come out, give them an opportunity to, brand their businesses and provide different foods and beverages and, you know, whatever it is they may have. So we're actually finishing up the planning right now, but the dates are set for July 11th and 12th. That's a camp here. I'm hosting a camp in Jacksonville, myself and Pro Camp, July the 1st and 2nd there in Jacksonville. But we're just building. We're going to continue to build. And it's going to be special as we go.
All right. Well, Fred, thanks again for calling the program. People will go check out your website to donate. And let me know when you have when you're going to get closer to the event so we can promote it even more, especially with the talent search and stuff. We have a lot of different radio stations on in Florida, internet and terrestrial. So whatever we can do to try to help promote that, we're definitely willing to do it. So thanks again for calling, Fred.
I really appreciate the opportunity, Neil. Thanks a whole lot.
All right, take care, Fred. I'll see you later.
All right, likewise.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Education Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, and all those different places. And we're on the Simply G Celebrity segment on the Simply G Media Network, and I'm so excited to welcome the program. And even though with our flagship station, I'm sorry, again, it's one of our big rivals, but the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, Jason Campbell. Jason, thanks for coming by to talk to us today.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Excited to talk to you. And when I kind of tried to look up and do research, I saw you've had a great career. You keep you're always doing the very best. You did really good in college and continue your career in the NFL. But one thing I saw that's very important that keeps you going, especially with adversity, Jason, some of the teams you've been on that have not been winners and different things, that God is really an important part of your life. Can you share us when you first found God?
Yeah, as a kid, I grew up in a household where both parents, they're still married, been married for like 44 years, and, you know, we was always involved in church growing up, and, you know, as part of us as a youth, you know, whether we was, working with Daniel, we start off in the choir, then you go to the usher, and just different things we used to do growing up, and Dad always told me, you know, like, during tough times, you know, even during the good times, you know, always keep your faith. And, God won't ever, he won't ever fail you. And, no matter what the circumstance look like, you know, don't get caught up into the circumstances. Don't get caught up into how things look, but just have faith that they always have a way of working themselves out. And I just remember even in college, Brother Chet Williams, who's a team chaplain, he's still a team chaplain there now. He was outstanding during our FCAs, during the season. I think I learned more that year during the season about my teammates than any other year I ever played football. And the reason was we would get in a room, we're probably like a group of 15 or 20 guys, and, as many guys on the team could come if they want. And for an hour, it was nothing about football. It was just about getting to know the person, and the person in the room. And our talks was, where they come from and how they grew up, and you would be stunned about some of the things you hear about what your teammates had to get through and what they had to go through to get to where they're at, and, how they try and change their lives, and, how God is a big more part of their lives and everything. And for them, like, their testimony was, I'm only here because the way God brought me out of certain situations and put me in this uniform. And that year we locked arms and we went undefeated. 2004 Auburn, and a lot of that had to do with because we were such a brotherhood and we had such great faith. And our verse that year was always Proverbs 3:5-6. Trust in the Lord all your heart, lean not to your own understanding, all your ways acknowledge Him, and He'll direct your path. And that's how I feel in my pro career. I've had to go through a lot of adversity. My contract year in Oakland, having two solid years out there, and I ended up breaking my collarbone and big 14-inch screws put in, and you still at the end is there. And he's just like, and they end up trading for another quarterback. And you're just like, man, what else can go wrong?
Right.
And, you know, you just find yourself now in a situation where, you know, you go to Chicago, you get healthy, you're in Cleveland, you played a little bit last year. But I always understood that, you know, football is it's my career, it's my job, but it's not my life. And like I said, the most important things in life, like God, family, career, and you know, and then finance. So, you know, it's just to be able to be where I'm at today, it's been a blessing, regardless of the adversity that I had to go through.
So I'm going to touch upon this Auburn experience. I watched the special on ESPN about Auburn and Alabama, the rivalry. It was amazing. And my wife was supposed to tape the rest of it, and I was like, because I couldn't get to watch all of it. And she said, I deleted it. I said, no. It was such an interesting story. And I was definitely rooting for you guys in so many ways because you see Auburn, you know, they're the superstardom, and I mean, Alabama is, and then Auburn kind of is the redheaded stepchild in certain ways. So your faith and everything that happened to you that season, do you think that was a key point in going undefeated in certain ways, Jason?
Yeah, I think it was a huge point. Like I said, I understand the 2010 team went undefeated with Cam as well. But, you know, from talking to a lot of people there, they say it was just a sense of closeness that we had amongst all our guys. We had like 20-some seniors that year, but all our guys had went through so much together as far as adversity, and then we ended up having a lot of guys go pro off the team as well. But a lot of it had to do with, you know, our faith and our team meetings that we had the Friday night before the game, where we gathered into the room. And, you know, we talked about the things that God has done in our lives and how he's changed us and how he continues to work with us. You know, of course, none of us personally, we all have some mistakes and things we have to improve on, but guys are just pouring their hearts out to each other. So when you feel another brother pouring his heart out to you, you know, you kind of, you know, feel like, you know, like he's giving you his personal life, you know, like, and then you telling him about your personal life, you know, it's just like, it's a sense of trust there. And that all played into how the burst came about, and all played about how we played that season. It's like every person trusts one another. And, you know, we always say iron sharpens iron. And so each player give you all, and you know, don't let each other down. And that's how we went through that whole season that year. And that's when we should not defeat it, because we felt like every time we touched the field, we could not be beat, because we had so much that was going on with us that, you know, we weren't afraid of anything.
And you shocked the world in so many ways because of that rivalry between Alabama, that Auburn, finally, national champions. You know what I mean? It must have been just amazing in the state of Alabama, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's always a huge rivalry. You know, you always talk to people, some people that be married, their wife is from Alabama, or their husband is from Auburn, or reverse. But every time you turn around, they say they don't talk to each other that whole day. I was like, really? And there's always been, it's also been some scary moments too. Like, you've heard, you know, things happen to kids or parents doing something to kids just because one of their teams lost or something.
Geez.
And they didn't take it well. And that's the sad part about the rivalry, because some people take it well too far. And, you know, like the guy poisoning the trees at Auburn and everything like that. I'm like, you know, that takes away from the game. I like, it's a rival within itself, it's always an in-state rival. So I was like, but don't take it so far outside the game till you do something to your kids, or you punish some people, or you're doing, you know, stuff that doesn't have nothing to do with the game. Like, keep it a fun game. Understand what the rival is, what it is, but don't take the personal aspects towards anyone else.
Exactly. We're talking to Jason Campbell from the Cleveland Browns, and really enjoying the discussion about his faith and the story and Auburn, and then going and dealing with adversity, especially with the Raiders and the injury and the Raiders, and then ending up with Cleveland. And I think that, Jason, one thing you got to thank God for is a lot of NFL quarterbacks, you know, have that situation happen to them, and then they end up never back on the field again. So they end up either retiring early or certain things. So you got to feel you're blessed in a way to keep your career going.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Yeah, most definitely. I always say I'll be going to my 10th season this year. And, you know, it's a blessing to play that long, because the average NFL career is 3 years. And, you know, you always hear about the guys that play a lot and seem like, you know, guys play a lot longer, but if you look at the average guys that come in and out of the NFL, it's really 2 to 3 years. And for me to be going to my 10th year, dealing with all the coaches I've had to go through, and then the different adversities for injuries, dislocating my knee back in 2007, and then having a broken collarbone on my throwing shoulder, like that could have been career ending itself. And, God has blessed me still to play even more years after that and everything. So sometimes you can sit back and say, what if, you know, you had one coach your whole career or one, two. But the other side of it is, you look at it and be like, you know, what a story, you know, to go through all those injuries and those different coaches and to be able to have a long career and, you know, and not look back. Maybe it can be a story for some other kid that, you know, just coming along and just how he sees an adversity. It may just keep him, you know, keep moving forward and not giving up and throwing in the towel. So I just feel like sometimes you feel like throwing in the towel, you know, something good will happen. And you just gotta persevere and just keep fighting. And I'll tell all athletes, I say, guys don't make it to this level because they didn't go through any adversity.
Exactly.
They got to this level because they knew how to handle adversity.
Exactly.
Get through adversity.
Absolutely. And one thing that you look at your faith and the God's been with you, you definitely are about giving back, Jason. And honestly, if you Googled yourself and saw that stuff, you're a very humble person that doesn't share as much. I found an article, and that's how I found out. This is the premise of our interview. It's not going to be about football. It's going to be about something that's really important on my celebrity show, is talking about people that give back. So what happened, Jason, is basically in the off seasons, you do a lot of cool things to help out the community and do things. So tell us a little bit about how you give back to kids and stuff like that.
Yeah, I usually go back home. I'm at the Mississippi. I usually go around and I talk to high schools. I usually go around talking to high schools, kids about, you know, education, staying in school, and then I go around and talk to a couple of high school teams, and I talk to some athletic banquets, about fighting adversity and about not quitting, you know, not ever giving up, you know, your dream. And I always tell people, a lot of folks can tell you what you can't do or what you can't achieve. If you listen to it, you allow that stuff to sink in and come true. But I always use it as motivation, and, you know, to let it motivate me to be like, you don't determine my future. You know, God does. You know, and just because you say what I can't do doesn't mean I can't do it. I was like, because not everyone's for you. And that's why I was telling them, like, when you start to do things or you know you're going in the right direction, there's always so many people trying to pull you down. And the reason is a lot of folks don't want to see you be successful or see you get ahead of them. I was like, so don't look at it that way. I said, look at it as something you want to do for yourself and don't ever quit. And so I do football camps in the summer, and they're free football camps. I team up with FCA down in Hattiesburg, Pineville. You know, it's ran by my Mitch Williams, and he does an outstanding job. And what he does is he has kids that come in every year. It's called a quarterback club, and he'll have about 100, 150 guys come in. And they keep them over the whole weekend. And for that whole weekend, he'll have guest speakers come in and speak about their faith, speak about, you know, how they were able to reach success in life or reach things that they wanted to achieve. And it's a skill, it's a faith camp and a skills camp, to the point where you're not talking about skills in football. You're talking about social skills and communication skills and, you know, choosing the friends, choosing the right friends to be around, you know, the choices that you make and those type of things. So it's teaching them how to become men.
Yes.
And it's outstanding. It's outstanding. It's a fun weekend. And then like I said, with our team over there, we do a free football camp for kids. 2 years in a row, we've had over 400 kids to come out. And it has been a lot of fun because that's just a way of giving back. You know, a lot of times people have these camps that get so expensive the kids can't afford to go to them. I don't want a kid back at home to have that. That's a reason for them not to be able to show up. And, you know, try to do something, learn something that may help them along the way, because I have other NFL guys that come and help work the camp as well. And we do the same thing that any of these other camps do, you know, across the nation. And we just want to bring it closer to them so they not just see us on TV, but they can touch us and feel us and actually hear us in person.
Well, Jason, a tremendous story of in the short time that we had you on the program, we definitely want to have you back again to maybe talk some football with us and some other other stories of how you made it in the NFL and stories of Auburn. So I appreciate you being able to reach out to you and connect with you on LinkedIn and really learn about you. And I'm glad that our international audience will learn more about who Jason Campbell is. Is there a place to find information on you? Again, we show your humility. There's not a lot out there to find you except Wikipedia. Is there anything else that I was missing?
Not yet. I'm actually in the process of probably working with someone to start branding the things a little more. But other than that, I just I'm kind of a low key guy, kind of just going on about my business and everything, and just try to do things to help others, and not looking for anything back. Just because I just think that's just